RDO podcast. This week I'm talking to Michelle Underwood about research ethics and integrity. Michelle, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi Kate, I'm Michelle. I'm the Research and Development Manager at the University of Warwick, and I've chosen research integrity and ethics to chat about today. I know it sounds a really dry subject, but I think it's a really important one, and hopefully as you sort of sit with us today, you'll realise it's not quite as dry as it could be.
Thanks, Michelle. So perhaps you could tell us a little bit about why you think research integrity and ethics is important for our researchers to understand.
Thanks, Kate. I think we have to work out that whether there's a direct impact on another group of people or whether our research is taken up by others, there's always short and long-term ramifications, and we need to think about those. Also, as we're engaged in more open access in our research, it's really important to think about who can access our work and how they can build on it. So it's only being clear with our research methods, our research process that we've gone through, how we've done it, what we've chosen to do, that we enable others to come up with solutions that would suit their specific global needs. And also, as we work more across the disciplines, so it's much more likely that we'd join a research team and there would be multiple disciplines in that group. I think it's really important that we know what's good practice in other areas and not just as our own, so that we understand why someone might be doing something a different way to how we would do it, what we would think would be good practice. For one reason, we may learn from them and be able to look at that and go, that looks like good practice. Maybe we need to bring that into our own discipline and improve our own standards of working. Or conversely, look at somebody else and go, this is the standard that we work at. It might benefit your own discipline. So that multidisciplinary perspective, as well as being open to research.
So that's really interesting, Michelle. Perhaps you could give us a little bit more of a definition of what you understand integrity to be.
Sure, definitely. So to me, integrity is those decisions about our behaviours as researchers that we can make by referring to the established best practice within our discipline. So that would be things like regulations and other professional guidance. So for me, working in education, there is the UK Professional Standards Framework, which is there to enhance learning, promote professionalism, but also comes up with the core knowledge and the professional values that surrounds what I do. When I worked in sport, each sport had its own national governing body who defined the rules, but also the standards of professional behaviour that we had to be. So thinking about what knowledge or the skills, capacity, qualifications people had to deliver particular training or support within that. So it's being able to refer to that wider package of best practice, I think. But I'm wondering about you, Kate, as a geographer, what did you have to pull on when you were doing your research?
Yeah, good question, Michelle. So in terms of being a geographer, I'm a fellow of the Royal Geographical Society, and we have our own expectations of how we would conduct research and the way that we approach our subject area. As a geographer, we are a bridging subject. So it's also important for us to understand how our work might influence and impact on other areas. So economic geography, we might need to be aware of financial regulations, for example. When we're working as an environmental geographer, maybe working in volcanology or glaciology, you know, we're going to be looking at things from an environmental impact view and using that lens on our subject. So again, we might need to think about how our research might impact on local communities, or perhaps even thinking about our carbon footprint if we're traveling around to actually study the potential climate changes. So again, because geography is such a wide-ranging bridging subject, we can also tap into lots of other different frameworks for best practice as well. And as a coach myself, I have to make sure I adhere to the ethical standards of the International Coaching Federation. So that's where my membership lies. And again, we have our own expectations of how we would behave as coaches as well.
Thank you. I mean, I think geography is such an interesting area because it does cover so many of those disciplines. But I think as we work within all our professional practices, all our organisations that govern what we do define what that integrity is, so that we have a space and we have a reference point that we can always work with, which I think is just where we need to start looking first.
Michelle, perhaps you could give us more of a definition then, or your understanding of what ethics is about.
Thanks, Kate. I'm going to start with the definition of ethics and then we can think a bit more. So ethics is decisions about behaviour that cannot be made by referring to the established best practice and demands further philosophical and moral inquiry. And that often involves hearing different opinions. And this is why we have ethics committees, because they are sitting there looking at the best practice that's been made by those professional standards. This is a subtle nuance to that. We haven't necessarily seen that, or we haven't got guidelines or legislation that exactly matches that version. And as we become more diverse in our research, then I think we're actually going to be needing to go for ethics approval much more, because we're beginning to recognise that one, we have impact no matter what our research is, even if we're not involving people or animals, we're having impact, we're changing things. And we need to think about how the impact of that research changes things, and is it changing things to for some people's advantage and not others? Or is that making something better for one country and not another? And therefore, there's ethical ramifications about how we think about that process. So I would suggest most people would, no matter what their research, look at what an approval of an ethical application is. Going through that process is a very good way of identifying what your research is actually going to do, and helps identify and plan that research in itself. But I think most people are having impact, are working on an area that will potentially have an ethical discussion about it. And so in a way, I support us doing more of it to help through. I think people need to recognise, though, that ethical approval can take a very long time. You need to find out when your ethics committees at your university meet and how regularly, and making sure that you're meeting the dates in time for you to move your research on. You don't want to be sat waiting to be able to go and do your field work or your primary data gathering and can't because you haven't got that ethical approval. And also thinking about, it may not just be your university ethics approval that you will need. So if you're, for example, if you're working in the NHS, you will need approval from them as well. So it's a staged process. You need to think about going through those stages. But I think it's a really positive enhancement to our research planning to go through that process.
I think that's really useful. And also, even if you don't need ethical approval, if the rules of your university say for this research there is no requirement for you to get ethical approval, going through the process of thinking about ethics is just as important. So, for example, if you're working on algorithms for a particular mathematical model, and then that algorithm is picked up and used by a medical device creation company, they are then going to take your research and use it for human subjects, for people. And so just being aware of what your research might lead to in the very far future. So for those of our listeners who are working on maybe fundamental physics, thinking I don't never need ethical approval, down the line we hope that your research will have an impact on people. So it's always important to remember that that research is so far reaching and can impact on people in lots of different ways.
And I think it's really interesting to think of, you know, people will pick your research up years after you've done it, and come and go, I saw your conference presentation, or I read your paper, and you've moved on, but the world is only just catching up with certain bits of it. So thinking about where you might be taking it, it will have a future to it.
So now we know what ethics is and why it's important, perhaps we should move on to thinking about what's research misconduct or questionable research, or I guess it would be unethical research might look like. So what are the key areas that you think unethical or questionable research might fall into, Michelle?
I would say there's probably about five areas. They cover a lot of sub areas, but there's probably five key areas that will help people thinking, you know, when they're looking at something, what do I need to consider? So the first one I would say is fabrication, and that's the making up or creating of information. So presenting something that doesn't exist as existing. Presenting, you know, your data as if you've done it, if you hadn't. Saying I went and spoke to 20 people, but you hadn't. So that's fabrication, that's making things up. And then there's the further move on, which is falsification. So that's manipulating and changing the research to say something. So rather than saying I went and spoke to 20 people from fabrication, it's about taking, say, 20 people's responses and saying that they said something different. Saying they all agreed with this point when actually maybe 15 of them hadn't. So that's manipulating or changing your research to say something else. Very simplistic examples. Plagiarism, so using the work of someone else without acknowledgement or permission, and thinking about, you know, it's always one thing I tell people is if you're going to use someone's copyright, you have to apply for that for a very long time in advance of needing it. So always, if you can own an image or own a graph or own something, that's a much quicker way of getting into your thesis. Whereas if you need to apply for using a copyright document, apply right at the beginning of your PhD, because it can take a very, very long time. So plagiarism, using work, whatever the format, of someone else's without acknowledging or permission. And then there's a failure to meet legal, ethical and professional obligations. So not following legal requirements for working with animals or human tissue. And there's a lot of legislation that, you know, supports around that area. And there's a possibility of also a breach of duty of care. So being negligent in our care of human participants, putting them at risk or not informing people of the risk. So there's a breach of duty. So failure to meet and breaching that duty of care. And that also includes misusing personal data. So again, thinking about going through that ethical review process, even if you think you don't need to do an ethical process, it's thinking about where you're going to store your data and how it's going to be stored. How are you going to make it safe? You know, where is it going to be kept on campus? If you're, so thinking about that, making sure that things are safe. And then also that failure to meet, so going for improper conduct. So if we are funded by a body who have a vested interest in our research, and we don't tell people when we're completing our research that we were funded by people who actually wanted us to find a particular result, could look not good. And then the final area I would say would be misrepresentation. So that's misrepresentation of our data. So suppressing results that don't meet our hypothesis, or misrepresenting ourselves or others, saying they've been involved in something where they haven't. So big areas, lots of small subsets of that, but are hoping that, you know, that will give people an idea where to start when they're thinking about it. So thinking more about improper conduct, I often get asked whether I think there's been an increase in misconduct in research in the last sort of 20, 30 years. And I think it's hard to say. I mean, if we look at Google Scholar and we search Google Scholar for the term research misconduct, it's increased hugely. So in the 70s, you probably find 10 mentions of it, through to 18,000 mentions of research misconduct. In the decade 2010 to 2018. Is it because we're discussing research conduct more? Then yes, I think we definitely are. Are we recognizing it more? Yes, I think we definitely are doing that again. Is there more research misconduct? I don't know. All I can say is that we are talking about it, which I think is excellent. And I think we recognize it, we see it. And as we work across the disciplines, we're getting ideas from how other people do things. So we can go, that's not how we do things here. Do we need to do things better?
So we've been talking about research integrity and ethics, why we think it's important. We've given some general definitions of integrity and what we think ethics is about. We've also looked at perhaps some of those more questionable research practices and given some definitions. So Matt, perhaps we could move on then to thinking about any examples that we could share to help us understand ethics and integrity more widely. Michelle, what examples could you give us for that might be relevant for the researchers listening today?
Thanks, Kate. And this is what I think is really important, because we can talk about research integrity and ethics, but actually we need to think about different examples because they're so subtle. And sometimes I think the best learning from this is actually looking at examples and going, is that an ethics or is it an integrity issue? It helps identify where we should go. So I'm going to give one example, and then I'm going to give us some four values, which I think might help us unpick it a little bit. So my example that I've got so far is I have not been able to recruit enough participants for my experiment because it's seen as too risky. I have access to departmental funds. Should I pay people to take part in my research? So is this an ethics or is this an integrity issue? If we look at four key values, this might help us work through. So one first value is reliability. So is the design, the methodology, analysis, and use of the resources reliable? Is it honest? Is it transparent, fair, and unbiased? Third key value, respect. Is there respect for people, society, cultures, environment, and ecosystems? And the fourth value, accountability. Is there accountability from all of those involved through to its dissemination and repetition? So, back to the original question. I have not been able to recruit enough participants for my experiment because it's seen as too risky. I have access to departmental funds. Should I pay people to take part in my research? So, is it an ethics or an integrity issue? Thinking about, can we pay people to take part in a research experiment that is viewed by them as a risky process? What do you think, Kate?
It's a really good question, and one that I'd want to ponder about. And I think that's part of ethics and integrity, isn't it? Sometimes it is about what is deemed to be ethical and have integrity. For some situations, paying participants to be part of a research project might be absolutely okay. For large-scale medical trials, people are paid. That, you know, you get money to be to take part in that, and you have to assume that if huge big drug companies and organizations are paying their participants, they must have gone through ethical approval. Integrity, I always feel, is more about your personal values. So there's the integrity of the research, but also there's your own personal integrity as well. How do you feel about paying people to be part of your experiments? Do you see that as being the right thing to do? And that maybe links back to researcher reflexivity as well, and our own views and our values and what we bring with us to the research place. I haven't actually answered your question there, Michelle.
That's fine. I think reflexivity is interesting because it's whose definition of risk we're talking about. And we're talking about whether if we're paying them, are we going to tell them about the risk, and are we going to properly inform them of the risk to them? We don't know what the risk is in this instance, but it's thinking about, Is it honest? Are we being transparent and fair with people? And are we being respectful as well? So are we being respectful to the people that we want to join us? And the accountability of what is the caveat of what do we do if something goes wrong because of the risk involved in the research? So for me, there's a lot of integrity about this, because there will be a great deal of best practice, probably in whatever discipline, that surrounds this. So there should be either legislation or best practice that we can pull on for guidance and say, this is a risk, as long as it's managed, as long as we don't breach our duty of care. As you're saying about drugs trials, you know, there's things that we have to take steps into the unknown, but we need to make sure that people are prepared and we're supporting them through it. But if there isn't best practice that we can pull on, it then becomes an ethical issue. We have to then take it to an ethics group to discuss and look at the comparators. So I would be looking at best practice within my discipline to start off with. But also, if I didn't find that there was anything in that, I would look at a comparator discipline and see if they had something that could be useful to use. So that would be my starting point of unpicking those. Shall we look at another one?
Yes.
So our second example is this one. A few pieces of the evidence I collected during my field research contradict my main findings. Can I ignore the contradictory evidence when I report my findings? What do you think, Kate?
Oh, that one just screams to me. I want to scream out, no, this is even more important that you tell people. There's so much stuff happening that we want to know about, just because it wasn't what you're expecting. Maybe not only is it perhaps unethical for you to not tell us, but actually it's really even more important that you tell us, because that might stop others doing the same thing. So a non-result, or where your experiment went wrong, don't think of that as a research failure. Actually, what you've shown to other scientists in your discipline or your other researchers in your discipline, that that, you know, this doesn't work. So it's really ethical for you to tell your discipline, because you're going to be saving them money, time, resources in the future. So sometimes we get kind of hooked up with this ethical being all about people, but actually it's ethical for you to inform your discipline when things don't go wrong, so that they don't make not make the same mistakes, but make to take the similar steps, so that we can progress our science forward or our discipline going forward.
And I think sometimes that contradictory evidence could be absolutely the problem solver that we've been looking for.
Yeah.
And I think it's that creativity of thinking, actually, this might be the solution. So, yeah, absolutely.
So, Michelle, we've talked about some examples of ethical dilemma and integrity in our research. If we think that we do need extra support to find out or to get ethical support and have questions about our research integrity, where could we go? What places are there that we can go and seek support and advice?
Thanks, Kate, because it is a huge area. What we've done at Warwick is, if you go to the Research and Development webpage, there is a section on that which entirely takes you to all the links that you need about research integrity and ethics. So it will take you through to the university's integrity and ethics policy. It will take you to UK Research Standards Institute. So all of those spaces, which will give you the legislation, but also ask your supervisor. They will be able to help. One of the things I've put on there, though, is something called the Dilemma Game, which I think is fabulous. And it was developed by the Erasmus University in Rotterdam. And they have 75 dilemmas currently. They're adding more. And they've organised them by role and strategy and phase of research that a researcher will go through. And they're great. They give a statement, like the ones we were talking about earlier. They'll give a statement and then give you four answers. And you have to choose your answer. And I think this is probably the best way that we can learn, is actually sitting around as a group of with our peers and our friends and go, okay, this is today's dilemma. What do we think the answer is going to be? and start unpicking it, thinking about those four values again. What do we think is what do we think is about it? Is an honesty and transparency, you know, and start to do it. Because I think having these open conversations about this will help us move on and address new challenges.
We'll make sure that the links to the researcher development webpages are in the description of this podcast. So it's been really lovely to talk to you today, Michelle, about research integrity and ethics. And I agree, it's not the dry subject that perhaps we all panicked thinking that this podcast might be about. It's been a really fascinating discussion. What would be your final thoughts on this topic for our listeners today?
Thanks, Kate. And it's been a pleasure to be here. You're right, it is a big subject and most of us get really concerned about it. I really shied away from it. I found it very confusing as an early researcher. And it's because of that, it's why I start running their workshops, because I think it's about having those discussions. I keep learning, I keep hearing things. Research is changing all the time and it's really important that we just keep up with thinking about what our obligations are, but thinking about the fact that our research will create impact. Whatever that impact will be, it's our responsibility to make sure that it's positive and beneficial. So I'd really encourage people to start looking at the resources. It's really well supported. And hopefully this will just inspire people to even just go and pick up the Dilemma Game and start there as a nice, easy start in. But thanks for inviting me along. It's been great.
Lovely. Thank you for coming on today. Thanks, Michelle.